like starting this one the same way. So, hi everybody. This is the era.
What's up, everybody? This is the Arrow.
Wait.
Boom, 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 boom.
Tony, you start us.
Okay. Hey, what's up, peoples? This is the Arrow podcast, where we talk about arrows and how far we think they can possibly go. I mean, I think with our scientific advances, we can probably shoot an arrow to you know, the moon.
You think we can shoot an arrow to the moon?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're like days away from that.
I'm here to tell you that we cannot do that.
No, I keep up with the Reddit pages, and I feel like we're very close.
We would miss by a long time. even if we could get an arrow to the moon, there's no technology inside of an arrow that would guide it to the moon. We would miss by a long time.
I mean, I am very, very hopeful, and I mean, and that's what we're here to discuss today.
So actually, you know, funny enough, when I don't remember which scientist it was, but someone theorized the idea of an infinite universe, which was not always the understanding that we had about like the cosmos and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching this in the show Cosmos, the one like hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. I've watched it probably like 35 times. But is that any surprise to you, Tony?
Only 35.
Only 35. Wait, why not 60? And they shot an arrow. He was like, if you shoot an arrow, you know, there's one of two outcomes. Either the arrow, just like, if you imagine like shooting an arrow into the cosmos, there's like one of two outcomes. Like either one, the arrow continues to travel in the same direction forever, never hitting anything, or you hit a wall, right? But if the arrow hits a wall, then you should be able to climb to the top of that wall and shoot an arrow out from the top of that wall. And then the results will be the same. Either it hits a wall or you climb on top of that wall and shoot an arrow again. And like the only conclusion is that the cosmos have to be infinite because of that little thought experiment. Because you either hit a wall and climb up to the top and shoot again, or you never hit a wall.
This would be so funny if this is someone's first episode and they're just like, what the heck is going on?
Where's Aang? Where's Katara? Where's Korra?
They titled this episode really wrong.
Yeah, this is... I don't remember any of this in Korra alone. Cosmos was never on Nickelodeon. What are you guys talking about? Well, here's a news flash for you. Half of this last season of Korra was never actually on Nickelodeon either. So.
Dun, dun, dun.
At least not the TV network. It was on their website. So we spent about 3 minutes at the start here talking about that. Probably a little bit more with the ad and the intro music. It's probably about 3 minutes and almost four minutes now. So, Tony, what is this podcast? Who are we?
This is the Arrow podcast. It's a podcast where we talk about everything Avatar, Last Airbender, as well as Legend of Korra. And yeah, I mean, today we're here to talk about episode 2, Korra Alone. Korra. And this is a lot of people's favorite episode.
Yeah, a lot of people really, really like this episode. It's a really good one too. So I think it's a well deserved fan favorite. I'm more of an Enter the Void kind of guy myself. But Korra Alone is also a pretty good episode. Beginnings are also pretty good. I think the show is just pretty good. If you ask me. But yeah, Tony, do you have any announcements for everybody before we get started?
No, not in particular. I just want to say we apologize. We had some recording issues earlier this week. Recording this episode earlier this week. We had some problems and we decided to just scratch it and start anew. In that last episode, I think we just mentioned in the beginning that we did pick our two winners. We had a fan page, we had another winner. Those have been sent out. And I like doing the giveaways. It's fairly simple for us. We get to collab with other individuals and to support smaller pages. We've done the book, we've done sticker pages for the last two giveaways, and we just want to continue that. So follow our socials on Instagram and Twitter. And Chan, what are those?
The Arrowpod, specifically at the AeroPod.
Exactly.
That, like, A with, like, a little circle around it, you know, for email addresses.
Yeah, so follow us. We normally post when the podcast comes out, especially on weeks like this when they comes off, they comes out on off days, and also just reposting a lot of different creators that we really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Tuesdays are a weird day to release a podcast, it feels like. I don't think it's a weird day. It's just like...
It hasn't been optimal for us lately.
Lately, it's been really rough. I think that, like, we've had, you know, Tuesdays have worked out decently well for us for the last 2.5 years. But my thing is that I don't even know if there's any one day of the week that would actually work 100% of the time for us.
We'll figure that out, and we'll get back to you guys. And if anything changes, look to our socials for any updates.
Absolutely. Let's get into this episode. So,
this is a beefy episode. It is
quite the, you know, it as beefy as it is, I have very few notes on it.
Yeah, it goes quick, but there's just a lot of, like, subtle details. People really diagnosed this episode fairly thoroughly, deep, mm-hmm. Extensively, just for the amount of the subject matter of, like, trauma and that it goes into, and specifically with Korra and everything. So I know we talked about that. We mentioned in prior episodes that we wanted to do a whole episode on that, just on. PTSD, trauma, and all of that, to dive in a little bit more deep. So we're definitely going to mention it because it is majority of the episode, but we're not going to go in super depth this time around.
Yeah, probably look out for a bonus episode about that kind of stuff in the next 2-ish weeks.
Yeah.
Just because that's kind of the rhythm of how things go around. We got about, like, 1 or 2 more episodes in us before we do a bonus, so let's definitely remember to make that the bonus episode. Because I probably won't remember by then. So starting off in this episode, we see Korra is in the bathroom healing herself after the fight that we saw her getting into.
Oh, yeah.
Last episode, if anybody doesn't remember Korra, we only saw her for a brief moment. She was in an underground fighting ring, kind of looked like, no, not entirely legitimate or legal. she's just in the bathroom kind of healing herself as... someone's, like, kind of pounding on the door and asking her to come out. As she comes out into the world from the inside of this building, she turns and she sees what we are going to call the Phantom. The Phantom is literally just a reflection of Korra, but from the day that she had fought Zaheer, she has the chain around her wrist, she has the shackles on her ankles and everything like that, and has the glowing eyes as if she's in the Avatar state.
Yeah, so it's like what we know right now, it seems to be some sort of hallucination, some sort of figment of her imagination kind of manifesting in the physical world that she's able to see, and we find out that nobody else can see as she kind of tries to fight the Phantom off. And everybody else on the street ends up not being able to see anything there. Mm-hmm. And she even said, you again. So this means that she's seen this Phantom prior, at least a few times, or at least once before she, you know, mentions this you again. So it's something that's kind of been following her around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so she kind of, and I think that soon after we start to, we see her kind of move away. From the Phantom. Am I forgetting something? Because I'm thinking, like, we go into a flashback pretty soon after this.
Yeah. So that one is, like, everybody's, like, worried about her. She steps away. People are trying to help her, but she's like, no, I'm fine. And then that's when we go into the flashback of her in Republic City.
Yeah, so we're getting... So one thing I like to talk about in this episode is I think that this episode is a really great mirror to the episode last time, and I think that they accomplish the same thing in different ways, I think, for different characters, right? I think in last episode, we accomplish, it's been 3 years since we've seen our heroes, and this is what they've all been up to since those last 3 years. Whereas with Korra, we see where she's ended up with absolutely no context as to how she ended up that way. Whereas everybody else, we see where they ended up, and all of the context is given to us. I like the kind of... duality in terms of like how that worked, just because we get to see all the struggles that Cora goes through over the course of 3 years. Like me and Tony said, it doesn't feel like this episode isn't jam-packed with events per se. It's more jam-packed with context. And so yes. I think that the context that they give us here over these last 3 years are so valuable to like how just how we get to know Cora as a character and how we get to see her struggle and see who she becomes for the rest of the season, and particularly almost for probably like the enduring character that we're going to learn Cora to be basically is defined by this episode.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So we do start with that flashback back to Republic City. So everyone's kind of just saying their goodbyes as Cora's still in her wheelchair. She seems to be heading back to the Southern Water Tribe with her parents. Mm-hmm. So everyone's saying goodbye, and even Asami offers to go with her. So she's like, "Are you sure you don't want me to go with you?" But Cora reassures her, telling her, "Hey, you know what? It's just going to be a couple weeks." So at this point in time, Cora still thinks that like it's only going to be like a very short amount of time that she's going to need to take to recover. Mm-hmm. And by the time, you know, she's able to at least come back to Republic City in some form, if not completely healed, at least like somewhat healed.
Got you. Yeah. And so she goes down to the Southern Water Tribe, and, you know, she's like, they're talking about how she's going to be gone for 3 weeks and everything. And, you know, it's interesting because like 3 weeks is optimistic, I think it sounds, right?
Yeah, I think they said a couple weeks, and then
she's been there for three weeks.
Yeah. So I didn't think they like specified there, but they're just like, you know, a couple weeks, you know?
Yeah, and I think on some level it's optimistic, and on some other level it's like, well, this is Katara we're talking about, right? Like if anybody would be able to work something out, like Katara would at least be
the best healer in the world as of right now.
Yeah. So it's not like it's not like it's so far-fetched, and at the same time, I don't know if anybody really knew the extent to how badly Cora had been damaged at this point. Mm-hmm. Not only like mentally, but physically and mentally, right? I think that she's been incredibly damaged. She's been through physical and mental trauma, and mm-hmm. that takes more than a couple of weeks to fix. We see that. Yeah, I was going to say that, like, we see Cora having nightmares about her fight with Zaheer and waking up in the middle of the night, kind of going out onto the balcony, and her mom is like, "You've been at this for 3 weeks, and I haven't seen you move. I haven't seen you, like, leave the house. I think it's finally time that you go to Katara." And Cora agrees, but, I mean, I think we can assume that she's been, not only has she been kind of unmotivated to do anything for 3 weeks, but she's been having these nightmares for the last 3 weeks too, right? Like I think
that's kind of the shocking thing. It's that you think that Cora, like her demeanor, her character, you would think that she'd be eager to go to Katara to get healing and to you know, start the process as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. But here we see that she's been there for 3 weeks but hasn't even attempted to go or even leave their home. But something we kind of have to realize is that she's mourning. She's mourning the loss of herself again. It's fairly similar, but it seems to be even worse when she thought she lost her bending abilities and she only had airbending. And that seemed to be that the title of Avatar, something that she's thriving for and something that she identified as, was ripped away from her. And now, once again, she's in the position where her physical attributes, which is something that we know that she ties very closely to being the Avatar, has been taken away from her again. So she's really taking time and mourning the loss of who she was.
Yeah.
And not understanding if I'm ever going to be able to get back to that ability or back to where my baseline. And then something that you mentioned last time when we were recording this was just the time period of all this stuff happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that... but yeah, like last time we recorded, I was talking about how between Cora fighting Unalaq and fighting Zaheer and today, today in the flashback at least, when she's talking to her mom, I can't imagine that it's much more than 6 months between all of those events happening, right?
Yeah, because between book 2 and 3, it's a handful of months. And then just like however long like season 3 took,
right,
would have been like an additional couple months. So like what, like not nearly a year.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think. Like, unless we're missing
months
something.
8 months tops, like really in my head, like I don't think that we're really dealing with like a, so Korra has gone through some of the most traumatic events that she possibly could go through in the span of the last year. And so I think that, you know, I think that we need to put that into context. I think that so many people are focused on the idea that there's like years and years between these seasons. There is and there isn't, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. right? Like, these seasons kind of bleed into each other, with the exception of this one. This episode is kind of the bridge between the present day and the last season, and that's the only real bridge that we get. We don't get any other flashbacks after this, really. We only get contextual conversations. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that's why people sometimes will be really upset that they're like, dude, why is Korra so scared of everything? Why is Korra, like, not strong? Why is she, like, breaking down all the time? And it's like, you probably have never had a near-death experience if you're asking that question because it really does, like, and I'm not talking, like, a near-death experience, like, you almost got hit by a car. Like, I'm talking like a near-death experience where someone or something was actively threatening your life. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, that changes your perspective on things so much. It makes the world not a safe place. It makes the world such a scary place to be in. And I don't care if you're, you know, the toughest and strongest person in the world. It doesn't matter, right? There's like a lot of conversations that I wanted to have from when we tried to record this last, and I can't recall all of them, so I want to keep going and just talk about as she goes to Katara. Mm-hmm. And as Katara is, you know, walking her through the healing process and even just kind of diagnosing her, you know, telling her that there's like a lot of damage that Katara feels like she's unsure if Korra is actually going to recover from this.
Yeah, she said like it's, you know, it is possible, but she has to put in the work herself as well, because she mentions like, there's a lot of internal damage that the poison did. So regardless of her, you know, breaking both mm-hmm. her legs, there's an additional damage done because of the poison, the effects that it took, even though it was, they were able to bend it out of her. Like it still did damage. So it's not just a simple like fact of like, oh, like just, you know, heal your bones and you're good as new. There's so much other damage that is not taken mm-hmm. into account that, is the reason why when she was sitting in the pool, she had no movement at all in her toes or anything. Like just the fact that Korra told her like, just concentrate on moving your toe. So it's just like trying to break down that healing process of like, I want to walk and run and move how I used to be. It's like, no, step one, mm-hmm. step zero is just move your toe. And I love that fact that it's like she got excited. Mm-hmm. Like she really was enthusiastic and bright. Apparently she hadn't been in the last 3 weeks, but you know, that was some progress that she was able to see.
No, I to me, that's so like, to me, that's like so real. You know what I mean? Like I think back to like sessions that I have with students and how, I think that my kind of slogan when it comes to, these moments in which they feel like things are almost impossible for them, right? I think my slogan kind of goes to, I stole it from Frozen 2. It's do the next right thing, right? Do the smallest, like do the smallest possible action that moves you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So if you're incredibly depressed and you have a hard time getting out of bed in the morning and you know you need to get out of bed, you need to study, you need to make breakfast and all of those things, like, but you're in bed. My word of advice to them is like, okay, what's the smallest thing that you can do that'll move you towards getting out of bed? And they're like mm-hmm. Sitting on the edge of the bed, and I'm like, smaller, like go smaller, right? And it's like rolling over to the other side of the bed, and I'm like, go even smaller than that. And they're like opening my eyes, and I'm like, yes, like before you get out of bed, you know, before you get up for the day, you need to open your eyes. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay. And then I'm like, okay, now what do you do? And they name like every single little micro step. And I see this like in this healing process, like before you can bend, you need to be able to run. Before you can run, mm-hmm. you need to be able to walk. And before you can walk, you need to be able to stand. Before being able to stand, you need to be able to at least move your legs, right? Or move yeah. like the parts of your bodies that are attached to your legs. So being able to move the toe, mm-hmm. which she hasn't been able to do in about a couple of months at this point, maybe a month or so mm-hmm. at least. It is exciting. And I think it's the right way to go about that healing process is like take the smallest possible steps you possibly can in terms of starting to move in the right direction.
Yeah. And then in the next scene, we even see that she progresses to assisted mm-hmm. walking. So she's like gripping both sides of the, what is it called? Not a beam, or the rail, yeah. the railings.
I know there's like a specific thing for that being called. I used to work with somebody yeah. who needed to use those a lot. I don't yeah. remember what they're yeah. called.
Yeah. Well, it's like the two railings that give her enough space to, mm-hmm. to walk through. So she's able to progress to that and, you know, take a slight step. But we see that she has a flashback and, again, of Zaheer and ends up falling. So Katara informs her that your body still thinks mm-hmm. you're in danger. Mm-hmm. Like it's still reacting to the effects. And again, with trauma, with PTSD, that's just the signals that our body gives us of anxiety, of panic, of the physical reactions that we have. It's truly it's trying to protect yeah. us. It's trying to tell us like you're in danger. Something's going on and you need to react mm-hmm. now. And I think that's a perfect way to Katara put it. Like your body still thinks that there's something yeah. going on.
Yeah. And so to me, I think it's really important to note that, when we go through a traumatic experience, I wish I had like a whiteboard that people could see so I could draw on. but like I used to have a teacher who would explain it like this. And she would explain that when we have a traumatic experience, everybody in their life will probably experience some form of a traumatic event, whether it's like a small trauma or a large trauma. Mm-hmm. And when those events happen to us, we all end up in what's called trauma pond, right? But what we know mm-hmm. about ponds and lakes is that they have streams that lead out to the ocean. And so, you know, you might stay in trauma pond for, you know, a couple days, a couple weeks or something like that. But after a little while, most people will be able to, like, start moving to the stream and go all the way out to Happy Ocean, right? And, like, and mm-hmm. Happy Ocean is where you want to be. It's where you, you know, you can look back at the event. You can say it was really, really tough, but I got over it at this point, right? Mm-hmm. But for some reason or another, and it's different for everybody, there's no necessary, like, complete explanation behind it. Some people get stuck in that creek between trauma pond and happy ocean. And so that trauma, mm-hmm. you know, that trauma response that they're in for a couple of weeks no longer lasts for a couple of weeks. It lasts for like a month, a couple months, a few years even. In this case, it's been lasting for years. Yeah. And the only way to get out of, you know, that creek is by asking for help from somebody a lot of the time.
Yeah, but it's such a difficult thing to mm-hmm. ask for help. When individuals go through trauma, it's a difficult aspect to explain what your experiences mm-hmm. are, or even rationalize it, because in your mind, depending on what it is, like in your mind, it might not seem like the biggest of deal, but your body's still mm-hmm. experiencing it. For example, like myself, I broke my arm in playing football in high school, snapped my arm in half, had to wear a cast for 9 months. And my coach, my football coach, tackled me. So for me, I wanted to play again the following year. So I started spring training. I went, and when I stood in front of that coach, I personally didn't feel afraid whatsoever. Like I knew it was an accident, but my legs were shaking, and I felt sick to like mm-hmm, my stomach mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and my body was reacting to being in yeah. front of him, because it understood that like this person did mm-hmm. something to me and I should probably not mm-hmm, be in front mm-hmm. of him. And it was such an embarrassing thing for me to say, to explain to other people. It's like, oh, I'm afraid of my football coach, or I'm not afraid, my body's afraid of my football coach. So I just told people, I'm like, hey, I have no interest in football anymore. I don't want to do this. And people just thought I was a quitter. But for me, in my mind, it was easier for people to believe that rather than try to explain what I was actually going
and
through.
Yeah, and it's because it's such an opposite experience as to what we are typically used to experiencing, right? We don't, like, these events, even though I believe that everybody has some, at least small level traumatic something that happens to them throughout their lives, mm-hmm. just however many experiences that we have. But I don't think most people get these really large scale experiences, A. Yeah. And I think B, even if people have had those large scale experiences, a lot of people do move past it for one reason or another. And so you see all these people who are out there and they're all okay. And, you know, I think that people use it as a meme these days, where it's like, you know, you want to say you're not, you say you're okay, but you're not really okay, but you can't say it. But like, that's really what people feel like, right? Like, like people really feel like, I shouldn't feel scared. I shouldn't feel trapped. I shouldn't feel pressured. I shouldn't feel in danger. But I do. I'm literally just in the middle of the grocery store buying bananas and I feel completely threatened and I don't know why. And that's like the reality of the situation that people live through every single day.
Yeah. And then I think that kind of leads into the next part, which was her getting letters from Asami, Mako, and Bolin, variety of letters, and they were all kind of explaining their lives. Asami getting like the contract to build the rail system, Mako kind of becoming the detective again, Bolin being able to go around helping Kuvira to reunite the Earth Kingdom. So they're all doing that. They're all living their normal lives. And for Korra, it's like, I'm not able to do what I need to do in this world. Like, everybody else is moving on and being able to progress in aspects of their life that they truly are passionate about. But for me, I'm stuck here, not progressing, not being able to do enough or anything.
It's that feeling
anything.
Of being left behind.
Exactly. So I feel like that's why she never wrote back, why she never thought she could, because I feel like she was waiting for the instances where I'm like, okay, I'm okay. And now I have something to say, and not just like, hey, I'm still in step one of 150.
Yeah, I mean, even to the point where, you know, she gets so frustrated, she starts yelling at Katara, and she's even...
Yeah.
And it wasn't intentional, but she, like, blames Katara for not being able to heal her and everything like that, right? And and Katara just kind of looks at her and is like, it's okay, like, I understand you're angry, and says, like, you're not the first Avatar who had to go through this, you know? How do you think that Aang felt? When he found out that everyone he ever knew and loved was gone, right? Which is something that we talked about, like, it's like, dang, how did this kid not, you know, just completely just lose it? But at the same time, Katara's right. Like people have gone through things that are, you know, just as bad, if not worse, but they've all had their trials. You need to continue to fight through your trials, and she really does motivate Korra into being able to you know, get back on the horse, per se, and we do see that after a lot of hard work, Korra does regain her ability to move around relatively normally, right?
Slowly but surely, like, from that point when she yelled at Katara, it was 6 months with, like, just, like, being barely able to, you know, take a handful of steps. But she was able to progress to, like, walking the full rail all the way to walking the full rail. And then we even see that eventually she's able to, like, be up and about, like, by herself.
And so even eventually, like, Tenzin comes to visit her, and Korra's so excited to see Tenzin. And she's even, like, Tenzin, I've got to show you what I can do now. Like, I'm so much better than I was back in Republic City. And she goes to spar with the White Lotus, right? Like, and it's almost a mirror of, like, the exact first moment that we ever met her, right? And she's doing fine for a little while. And then all of a sudden, like, she gets a flashback of Zaheer and, mm-hmm. and just kind of falls apart. Tenzin calls off the sparring, and Korra just feels defeated.
Yeah. Yeah. Tenzin's trying to reassure her, as many people, as anybody would in that situation. It's like, hey, you have to take the time that you need. You have to be patient, but it's just like, you don't want to be patient. Like, being patient for months on mm-hmm. end already with, like, with, you know, progress, of course, progress.
It, now that if she's not able a to year be, at this be point, up right? And about, like, it could have already been yeah. a year at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we know just being able to walk was 6 months, so I'm pretty sure this was most likely at least another six mm-hmm. months. But she mentioned, she was like, hey, like, it's supposed to be me out there, like, helping everybody. Like, Tenzin's like, you know, the airbenders are doing their work, Rivera's taking control and, you know, getting a lot of ground with this. But she's like, no, like, that's supposed yeah. to be me. Like, I am the Avatar. I have this responsibility. And it's great that other people are able to stand up, but I that should be
yeah.
me.
And so she's even like, she's eating dinner with her family one night, and she tells them that she wants to go back to Republic City, and that she mm-hmm. wants to go alone just so that she can, she doesn't really explain this, but I kind of took this as like, I need to do this on my own because I need to know that I can do this on my own. Yeah. And they agree. And so, she even leaves Naga behind, I believe. Right. And she mm-hmm. gets on a,
yeah.
she gets on a sailboat. And, yeah, she gets on a sailboat and, you know, sets sail. She gets to the mainland, of the Earth Kingdom, and meets this guy who looks like Shu from the, from like the Painted Lady episode last season.
A distant relative.
And he was like, he was selling like fish and stuff like that. And, he had the, what do you call it? The picture of Aang. Right, he was with sushi. He was doing like the little marble thing with like the sushi. I don't know. I had that as my laptop screensaver for a really long time throughout college. I really really enjoyed that picture of him.
My wall of avatars and it's that single picture.
But one day, so he sees somebody you know, mugging an old woman. Or, like, robbing an old woman mm-hmm. and says, like, don't worry, the Avatar's here. And Korra springs into action and, you know, stands in front of them and says, like, stop right there. And they just kind of push past her really easily, just like...
Yeah. Yeah, the Earthbend, and she kind of fumbles and it just really just falls over. And it's like, are you sure you're the Avatar? And I know that must have been, like, a horrible, horrible blow to her to hear that from someone else, from a complete yeah. stranger, as we've most likely know that, like, throughout this process, it's her trying to regain the identity mm-hmm. of being the Avatar and taking on those wanting to take on those responsibilities again, and then to not be able to take out common robbers and to have even someone question if you're the yeah. Avatar. Like, I can't imagine how that must have felt
absolutely horrible, to the point, like, I think a lot of people, like, see this episode and they say, like, wow, Korra just, like, ran away, you know? And I don't believe that because I actually believe that she had every intention to, I believe she had every intention to go to Republic City yeah. When she set off on her own journey when she left the Southern Water Tribe.
Yeah, we even see the next scene that she's heading. She's, like, about to reach Air Temple mm-hmm. Island. But at the rock's edge, she sees the Phantom again, like, staring at her. And I think this hallucination is, like, a projection that was, like, that kept her mm-hmm. from facing the world. It was, like, her excuse. It was again, like, as we were talking about traumatic events, they are trying to tell us to stay awake, mm-hmm. to stay alert, to act, to react, because there's some sort of yeah. danger. And I feel like this hallucination manifested at the rock's edge because it was trying to keep her away from yeah. the city and to turn around, because, like, the world out there, you're not ready yeah. for
I
it.
Mean, she even goes out to the, she goes to the Tree of Time to kind of try to, she. Yeah.
Oh, wait, but even before that, like, she did the whole, she disguised herself as an Earth Kingdom citizen, and she cut her hair off. So it was very, very similar to the with scene Zuko. With Zuko and Iroh as they cut off their top knots. And again, it's kind of just that symbolism of like
not being worthy, not being good enough, and not being able to present yourself as this person who people are supposed to respect and look up to. You don't deserve what people say about you.
Yeah, and that was common practice in the Fire Nation, as people might remember in the Kyoshi books, to have dishonor to any higher officer or your family, like you would cut off your top knot, and then everybody's able to visibly see like your dishonor.
The weight of the scene aside, Korra looks pretty good with short hair.
I prefer it.
I think that I'd be willing to say that that's not a very hot take. I think that's a very cold take. I think most people really like Korra with the is cold take a thing?
Really? You think people prefer
with short hair? Oh,
I thought everybody liked her with short hair.
I think that people like her with short hair.
Oh, I thought you said that was a cold
take. Yeah, a hot take would be if it's a hot take, it means that it's like most people don't agree. A cold take would be the opposite of a hot take.
Sure. Okay. Whatever you say.
Am I wrong? Am I misunderstanding how takes work?
I probably, most likely. I don't know. Okay. It's late.
Korra goes to the Tree of Time to try to meditate and reconnect to Rava for some semblance of feeling like she is herself again. We even see to the point where by the end of book two, and even throughout most of book three, Korra kind of realized, we had seen Korra, find herself and kind of become a person who didn't necessarily believe that she had to, be the Avatar, had to have Rava to be who she is. But at this point, she's so broken down that all of that progress has kind of gone away.
Yeah, it's almost like she's calling for that connection to Rava as of some sort of sign that I'm still the Avatar.
Yeah.
Still me.
And that's so common in recovery, this idea that you get better you grow from something and then something else happens and you get, and then you kind of go back to where you were before. And the way that I kind of describe it to people is oh yeah, you learned, you found the tools that you needed to be able to deal with these things as they were happening. Mm-hmm. And let's say you had a hammer, right? Like that tool, let's call it a hammer. But this time you ran into a screw. You can't do anything to a screw with a hammer, right? You can try to bang it into place, but it's just going to make your situation worse with that screw. You need to find a screwdriver, which you don't have at the moment. So then you revert to kind of not knowing what to do.
Yeah.
Korra talks to the spirits and they even didn't recognize her because they didn't feel Rava's energy coming off of her or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. So they were trying to help her out. They're like, hey, maybe we can help. Maybe we can do something. But she rejects them. She's I need to do this myself. I'm not taking help from anybody. So I don't know. I think that's a difficult process. Like you mentioned, it's that confusion of running into a different problem and feeling so confused and not really understanding that other people can help can help you through this process.
I know I have a, hold on, give me a second. I am trying to look in my notes to see what happens next, and I cannot find it.
Oh, it was just she ends up traveling seemingly all over the world. She was going through the ice. She walked next to lava pool. She was in the middle of the desert. Mm-hmm. Even thought she saw Rava, but it was hallucination. And she ends up writing letters to her parents, explaining hey, I'm okay. I'm in Republic City. Everything's totally fine. I'm taking it easy. Don't worry about it. So that's what the letters her father was talking about at the end of last episode that they think she's at Republic City. And she's totally fine.
Has no idea that she is not like where she's supposed to be. The Phantom also seems to be following Korra in her travels as well. We don't see any kind of confrontation with it, but we do see it kind of pop up from time to time in her travels. But to the point where finally, I think the last time we finally catch up to the present day as to because Korra found like the underground fighting ring and everything like that.
Yeah. So like she's like, you know, I'm ending this. And she follows the Phantom as the Phantom like leads her into the fighting ring.
And I mean, to me, I think it makes sense that Korra would think this makes sense. It's like you've been scaring me and I felt scared and all I need is to just feel strong again. Right. Which this doesn't even do. And it feels like the day that she found that fighting ring, it's not like she's been here long. This is like the one day she like kind of found it. It wasn't like she was been fighting there forever or anything like that. One thing that we didn't mention at the top of the podcast or a little bit earlier was that before we even go into the flashbacks, I think it was like, or maybe it was after the flashbacks, but the little dog, right? The little dog that can see the Phantom. Yes. And Korra's like, oh my gosh, you can see it too. And she goes with the dog to chase after the Phantom. And it leads her to the swamp. The famous swamp. The swamp. Otherwise known as the Foggy Swamp. It leads her.
So it turns out the pup wasn't a pup. It was the little spirit from the
And she's Tree like, of Time. You lied to me. And he's like, hey, if you knew it was me, would you have followed me here? And she was like, no. Eventually, Korra's just kind of in the swamp, just kind of trying to find her way around. And she sees the Phantom. I can't recall if Korra said it's time to finish this and like attack the Phantom or if the Phantom attacked her.
I think the Phantom attacked her because like I remember most of that was her running away. So her trying to fight, it wasn't working. So she ended up she was like fleeing for most of that. And then the Phantom like was able to grab hold of her with the with the chains and then like started pulling her down into a pool of poison. So it's like, it's her history. It's what took her down the first time is literally engulfing her, and she ends up passing out.
She ends up passing out, and then she ends up waking up as someone has saved her or found her and brought her into a cave and is cooking, and says something about Korra being the Avatar, and Korra's like,
yeah, it's like if your avatar senses brought you here, you should trust it. And it's like, wait, you know who I am?
And then I don't remember what the exact line is, but it's like, of course,
we were good
life,
friends in your
past I've worked past with life. Another avatar. We were good friends in your previous life. And then Korra was like, wait, are you Toph? And then Toph's like, good to see you, Twinkle Toes.
Oh my god.
And then that's kind of the end of the episode. I like the end of this episode. I like that we get to meet Toph. This is one thing I was talking about. I think that it makes sense that the members of the former Team Avatar who are still alive are all of the people who were important teachers to the former Avatar, right? Katara, Zuko, and Toph are all characters who had an immense impact on Aang, not only teaching him how to bend, but also just as great friends of his, great mentors of his. It would make sense that they would be that they would probably carry over some knowledge to Korra as well. I think that Toph presents a unique kind of experience by which she has gone through a lot of different phases in her life. She's gone through being the rebellious child to being the, she's gone from being the rebellious child to being the police chief to at the end of the day, being nomadic and kind of secluded. And we're not entirely sure why, But I think that I really am happy that we get to see Toph here and that we're going to get to know her in this next couple of episodes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm sure. I was so excited when I first saw this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, she's a fan favorite, right? Like, is anyone not a fan favorite? Like, let's be honest. But like, Toph is, like, such a fan favorite character. I think that she adds so much to the show. And I think, to me, out of every character that we see come back from the past, to me, Toph is the one that is portrayed most accurately to who we know her to be. I think that Zuko is more like, I mean, he's more grown up, right? Like he's taken a few cues from Iroh at this point, right? Katara, she's gotten kind of old. She had a family. She went from kind of being the stand-in mother to being the actual mother, and so she's lost a little bit of that fire that she's had when she was younger.
Even last time when we recorded, something that you mentioned was that, like, Katara is now known as the healer. And it's like, even though she was a healer, like, in the previous series, it's like, that's not what she was, like, formally known as. Like, she wasn't,
in
like,
fact,
the healer of
there
the
was
group.
This entire storyline around the fact that she didn't want to just be a healer, right? Like, I mean, there was other things tied to that, but...
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's something that a lot of people had a problem with. The fact that that we see all these characters like Zuko, Katara, Toph, and everybody, and they're like, why aren't they, like, you know, like, why aren't they fighting? Like, why aren't they, like, in the action and stuff? And they do a huge comparison to, you know, all the older individuals in the last series, which is like Bumi, Iroh still got it, and like all the White Lotus members and everything, like, because they're all, like, you know, they're all masters and they're all, like, tip-top physical shape and bending abilities and bending prowess. But the huge difference is that, like, they had to be out of necessity. Like, they are leaders and they were in the middle of a 100-year war. So for the entirety of their lives, they have been fighting. So, like, but individuals now with, like, older individuals now, they don't have a reason to be in tip-top shape and to continue fighting. And I mean, they, like you mentioned, like, Katara's, like, was able to kind of have a family and take down that motherly role.
And I think that, like, what people are going to see in this next episode is that the flashbacks that we get of Toph are not, like, they don't feel like Toph, right? Like, they don't feel like her. Maybe a little bit, but not too much. The Toph what we get to see here really feels like Toph, and I'm really glad for it. So, I think I would give this one, like, I think I would give this episode probably like a 9. I think it's, like, really good. I think it's got great contextual cues to it. Like I said, like you said, we should do an episode about, like, maybe breaking down a little bit more about, less about this episode specifically, but more around, like, PTSD and trauma and, like, how that shows up for people and how we can see that that's happening for Korra. I think that would be a really interesting episode for people to listen to. But
yeah, I think that's why this episode is so popular, because it's so relatable. Like you mentioned, we all in some sort of facet go through traumatic events, whether it be very small or very life-changing. So that the fact that we can relate with an avatar, with someone that is so powerful and mighty, I think that's such a beautiful thing. And for me, like, I want to give it a 10, just because of that, because, that's one of the, as I can remember, I mean, that's one of the first times that I ever saw someone go through something like this in an animated series. Back in the day, at least. So it was very meaningful. And I know it's still very meaningful for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for talking about it with me, Tony.
Yeah, of course.
We will be back soon. I feel like I don't want to even make any promises as to when we're going to be back because of how these last few weeks have been going.
We'll be back soon.
We'll be back soon. Catch us on Twitter and Instagram. And I know we haven't asked for this in a while, or maybe we asked for this really recently, but if you're listening on iTunes and you haven't, feel free to give us, like, a a rating, preferably a 5-star rating, but mm-hmm. you know, any rating to help us understand like how we're doing will be helpful. And then and you know, leave a rating and a comment on iTunes, just to kind of help out the show, make sure the show's still getting out to people, and also so we know what your feedback is for these episodes.
Yeah, honestly, we would really appreciate that.
Yeah, also awesome. So thanks everybody so much for listening. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we will catch you all next time.
Bye. Bye.